You've heard some individual comments on pace line selection. Now we're seated around the table. Several of the people who you heard individually are now gathered here to comment jointly. Let me start the ball rolling by saying that we have stated in the manual that you should not try to intellectualize pace line selection too much. We have discovered that the persons who try to verbalize and intellectualize exactly how they do it are having the most trouble because they're not letting their subconscious do the work for them. It was not a myth when we stated that if you pick enough successful pace lines, your subconscious will do the job for you automatically. And the way you train your subconscious is to see when you have picked a wrong pace line, which pace line, if you had chosen it, would have been successful. Always do regression on yourself. If you've made a mistake, see what the mistake was, do a postmortem, correct it, see what pace line, had you chosen it, would have been the winning pace line, and you will automatically digest correct pace line selection, as these gentlemen have all done. So in attempting to verbalize this, all of us are, in a sense, going against the grain of what has been successful for us. Do you agree with that, Al, that it's a kind of a something that becomes a part of your system?
Yes, I do. However, I think that, like in everything else, practice makes perfect. And I don't think that you can expect yourself to pick the appropriate pace line by just doing some handicapping now and then. I think I have to keep my hand in throughout the year, and if the tracks in your area aren't open, that you should still be buying some forms and practicing, because the more practice you have, it seems the easier it is to pick a pace line.
That's an excellent point. Just practice as you would any other profession. As athletes practice, as doctors and lawyers practice, we practice so long that we hope that they'll get it right one of these days. That's what someone said to me. I said I was in private practice for years. He said, well, if you've been practicing long enough, you ought to be able to get it right. Larry, you're the newest PERCO member. Have you any thoughts to add to this this problem?
Well, other than in the manual, you use your best races on a fast track at the same track, and I look at the half-mile speed, whether it be a route or a sprint, and I'll take the pace line from the race with the highest half-mile speed.
That's what we do, especially in the California circuit, where the second call or the half-mile in a sprint only, you know, we'll finish. We just automatically even just write down the fractional times without reducing them to feet per second, and determine the horses that are consistently the best at that point, and you usually find that they're among the winners. Well, Frank, you had problems in the beginning in picking a pace line, which you've overcome. Let somebody hear your comment.
Well, I think that initially my approach wasn't too organized. I found that if I start off, for example, by reading the conditions of the race and see how the race is set up, then I can put each horse in a proper perspective. And from that standpoint, it gives me a feel for each horse of the race that is in the race and how they're going to compete against one another.
Ron, how about you? You've always said that anybody who could pick the right pace line could make $1 million with the method. What progress did you make from your earlier stages of being befuddled by it to your present position?
Well, I'd like to go back to your opening remark about the subconscious mind forgetting all your failures and picking your successes and going from there. I think it's very important that you have a positive attitude when you approach the selection of the pace line, because if you don't have a positive attitude about the selection, you're going to have problems, there's no doubt about that. I think that was one of my problems in the beginning, that I wasn't approaching it with a positive attitude. As far as any detailed selection of the pace line, one of the first things I do is I like to, like Frank, read the conditions of the race and then just sort of scan all the horses in the race so that I get a mental picture of what's going to be happening in that particular race. And then I go into the more detailed selections after that.
Okay, we're going to take a race here in a moment and collectively pick a pace line. Bob, you started with the method winning the pick six and have been going downhill ever since. Bob is consistently in the 70% area and has always attributed his success to his immediate ability to catch on to how to pick a pace line. So would you share a couple of thoughts with us before we do a rundown on a pace line?
Well, first thing I do when I look at the form is I start at the bottom of the horse's past performances. And I'm not the only one in this group that does this. What I'm looking for immediately is a pattern, a training pattern, or a pattern of a horse working himself up to a good race. And I'm looking at the second call times as I'm scanning up, and is finished at or near today's level, and preferably on the same surface. What I'm hoping for is to always be able to use the last race, if possible. I found that that's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
If I cannot use the last race, I want to use the most recent good effort at or near today's level.
All right.
That seems to have been working all right.
I'm going to, if anybody forgets to memorize exactly what the form prints, I'll put this in the middle of the table. We will start, I'm looking at a race here at Arlington, it doesn't matter what the track is. And to review what everyone has said, the first thing we look at are the conditions of the race. Those are the conditions of the race. The most important thing I look for is the purse, the sex, and the age. If it's for fillies and mares, that's one thing, but if it's for open and you have some fillies and mares in the race, that's another thing. If it's for colts and geldings and the age is 3-year-olds and up, do I have some 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds mixed in with 3-year-olds? All these things I look for, as we all do. Now we know that we've established the purse of the race. Now we're going to look at today's purse value of each horse. So I do, just with a hand calculator, determine the average purse value of the horse I'm looking at. If the average purse value of that horse exceeds today's purse, I'm not going to throw that horse out because his pace lines don't look good. All right, the first thing you see on the pace line is the date. You guys jump in here anytime you feel like it. If the date is too far back, we're not necessarily going to discount the horse, but we're going to certainly circle that and make a note of the fact that he has not raced recently. If it is the first race over a given track, we're going to note that too. What we are looking for is either an excuse to use the last race or to not use the last race. For instance, if a horse raced first time in a year was his last race, you're certainly not going to go back into another year to get a pace line. You're going to have to ascertain his capabilities from what he did in his last race. The next thing we see, of course, is the distance of the race. Is the distance compatible with today? Now, any of you gentlemen have some comments? A lot of people would like to go back to a similar distance or the same distance, and they do it by writ. And we don't recommend that. The horse is running 6 furlongs today, and in his last race was a 6.5. What do we do? Do we take the 6.5 or do we automatically look for a 6?
I will still try to find the most recent race with a good effort.
Yeah, right.
And adjust that race to today.
Yeah.
Because that's what the horse has done recently. Even though it's not at this distance, if we can use our distance adjustments to bring him in line with his competition.
Another thing that I've noticed that people do is they see a route in the last race, they immediately want to go back to a sprint, and they fail to look at the internal fractions in that route if today's a sprint. They fail to ask themselves, why is he going into a sprint today? And frequently they'll find the answer in the internal fractions of that route. Have you found that that is a profitable thing to investigate?
I've found that to be one of the best payoff situations at nearly any track. And that's a router that's going into a sprint. Most of the betting public do not look at internal fractions. They just do not have either the knowledge or the time or interest to do so. And there's some very good betting opportunities for routers going into sprints.
That's on page 50 of the manual for those who might have overlooked the method by which we take a horse from a route to a sprint. Okay, the next thing we're looking for are the fractional times of the race. And that, of course, what we're the most interested in. But right after the final fraction, the final time of the race, is the indication of the condition of the track. Supposing it says muddy. Well, that concerns me a lot more than if it says slow or good or fast. I'm muddy, and a horse does exceptionally well when it's muddy. What do you find that taking one off the mud might do? If he ran well in the mud, there are some horses that just can't run other than in the mud very well.
Well, if you look beside their name, it'll tell you whether or not the horse is a mudlot. If the horse has never done well in anywhere in his list of past performances on anything other than a muddy track, then I wouldn't use him, unless today's track happened to be muddy. Some horses just can't perform unless they get their particular surface, so weather has a lot to do with it. I try as best I can to always use a pace line from what we anticipate the surface to be at today. It's not always possible, but you should work towards that end.
We did not comment on this in the manual, but I have found out it's a very useful tool. The next line on the past performances is the odds at which the horse ran his last race. Have any of you people been looking at the odds in helping you select your pace line?
I look at odds in the big picture. Frankly, I want a good payoff, so I'm not really disappointed if the horse has been running at higher odds in the past, but I compare that to the class level that he's been running at versus what he's running at today. For instance, if he's been running a couple of levels up over today's claiming value and at obviously higher odds, then that's a pretty good indicator that the fact that he's running at a lower level today, his odds should come down. But if they don't come down, then there may be some physical problems that the horse is having that will indicate that even with the drop, the horse isn't going to perform.
Larry, you got some additions to make?
When you talk about odds, it has to be at the same track, too.
Good point. Hadn't thought of that too much, but it's an excellent point. The way I look at odds is if I think that's a whale of a pace line that I'm looking at, and I think that the class may be comparable today, and I see the horses going off at 40 to 1, I ask myself, why did you think that? There's got to be some reason that went off at 40 to 1, and then I might take a second look at that pace line and realize that that horse was outclassed at that particular. The one thing that will confuse people sometimes is they fail to say when they say $15,000, I think it's a claiming race, they will not look at where it says allowance or where it says estate bred. You've got to make sure that you're looking at the classification of the race in dollars in the same category as today, allowance or claiming.
Howard, I might go back just one step back, and that is on these off tracks. Sometimes you'll find that what is labeled as an off track may be as fast or faster than a fast track.
Uh-huh.
A track labeled sloppy sometimes, which is drying out after a rain or the first day of a rain, can be a very quick track. And you should look at the daily track variant to see if it is unusually slow or whether it, even though it's labeled as sloppy, is running as fast as a regular track.
That's a very excellent point. The track I'm looking at, for instance, says muddy, The daily variant was 38, which indicates it truly was muddy. And depending on the area of the country, the person who designates the condition of the track has a little bit of the spirit of the Chamber of Commerce in him. And if the sun is shining in California, he'll label it fast. And it's not fast by our standards, and unless the horses are running according to the bias of the track. All right, the next line is a line of which there are many myths written and probably a lot of good material written. It's the jockey line. Al, what do you do about the jockey?
Well, I look to see, in effect, who's been riding the horse in the past, because I think it's a measure of trainer intent. Good trainers will use good jockeys on horses that they feel have a chance. And if I'm looking at a horse that's been ridden by the bottom of the barrel jockeys, then I figure that this trainer really doesn't think much of his charge. If I see a change to one of the top jockeys, then I believe that the trainer's intent is changing. And so I'm not really concerned who the jockey is, but whether he's a good jockey or a bad jockey, and that's, to me, I put in as part of the measurement of the trainer's intention.
Frank, did you have anything to say on jockeys that dispel myths or encourage myths or whatever?
Well, I do look at the more experienced jocks, and I do find that the horse is prone to running better with a better jock, and therefore that might affect his times and how he has positioned himself in the race and how well he does in that race. So it is something that you do want to take a look at each time you are in the process of selecting a line.
Ron, anything on jockeys?
I don't think I have anything to add, except I would agree with what Al said, that take a look at the jockey, see whether the trainer is switching to a top jockey, because that's a spot play, and usually it's fairly indicative of that the horse is going to be trying to win today.
Bob is our resident expert on jockeys and trainers. How have you found they affect the use of the methodology?
Well, oddly enough, I don't put a whole lot of weight on the jockey. I put more weight on the trainer, because the trainer makes all the decisions. A lot of time, he doesn't have much control over the jockey. Jockeys have their problems. They're represented by agents. And it's actually the agent's job to find employment for the jockey. And the agent sometimes thinks he can put a jockey on a winner, but the agent's doing the handicap, and he's not the trainer. The trainer calls the shots. The only thing I look really for is if my horse appears to be a contender today, if there's a jock switch, I try and find a reason for it. If it's not the same jockey that the horse is unaccustomed to, then I look to see where that jockey may be today, and if there's a reason why he's not on the horse.
Bob told me something. Bob is very conversant with trainers and jockeys personally, and he told me something which is very interesting. And it points out the fact that a positive jockey switch may be indicative, but a negative is not necessarily so, because Lafitte Pinquet told you that he was taken off of a horse and put onto another horse, and that the public immediately assumed that he was switching horses because the horse he was now riding was the better mount, and the one he was originally going to ride was not. Pinkai's statement was that he would much rather have been on the former horse, but his agent switched him merely for future assignments.
That's quite true. He had made an arrangement. This was told not just to me, but to a lot of people who were attending a little seminar that Pinkai was speaking at. And the race happened to be running that day. This was prior to the day's races. And he said, in the ninth race, I would much to have preferred to have been on this horse, but because of employment agents, arrangements made by my agent for future bookings, I'm riding a horse today that I really just wouldn't care to be on. And
right.
The horse that he would have preferred did act, in fact, win the race.
Well, what we have found, just summing up on jockeys and on trainers, that almost always, when you've used the method correctly, the horses that you pick for your ultimate betting will be trained by adequate trainers and ridden by adequate jockeys. Otherwise, they would not have supplied you with the figures, both in feet per second and class, that would have made you choose them.
Absolutely right.
The best jockeys ride the best horses. The best horses get ridden by the best jockeys, and they're trained by the best trainers, and we pick the best horses. So only in a situation that Al pointed out where a horse is ridden by a very bad jockey, and we don't have in the California circuit too many bad jockeys. Of course, the smaller track is all relative. What is a bad jockey as opposed to a good jockey? It certainly has nothing to do with the win-loss record as much as it has to do with how a horse is handled by that jockey in the course of a race. Some do make bad rides, but on the other hand, some of the better ones make bad rides. Chris McCarron didn't do too well on John Henry in a couple of instances, so the best can do a bad ride. Al?
Well, as I mentioned, I think, you know, the jockey indicates what the trainer thinks of the horse in the past, and I think that's important too. The assignment of the lesser light jockeys to ride horses in the past indicates that the trainer didn't think too much of the horse.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that these switches are important, but to me, I'm looking at the past performance lines, and I don't know who's riding the jockey today because the form doesn't tell you in that area. You have to look in the sweeps part or the analysis part to find out who is actually riding the horse today. So when I do my analysis, I just look at the pace, at the past performances, and I get my pace line and then run my horse. Then if I, after I've got my contenders and made my ratings and so on, if I find that there is a jockey switch to a top jockey or that a good jockey is riding the horse, then that's a plus to me. But I don't use it as a governing factor.
Okay, I think everybody has said in his own way that you must start, even though Bob starts at the bottom and works up because he's looking for form cycle. But in picking a pace line, you have to look at the last race. And if you cannot find an excuse not to use that last race, don't go back any farther than the last race. Now that should be your first rule. Use the last race unless you have a valid reason for going one more back. Then you look at that one. You must have a valid reason not to use that one, to go back one more, and so forth. And going back more than three or four, you're going to have to come up with a very valid excuse because you're looking beyond the recency factor.
It's called wishful thinking.
Yes.
Really.
Okay, and so...
Is a difference in class level a reason to go back? For instance, if today's race is a $20,000 claimer, and the last race was run at, say, 32, and the race before that was run at 20. Bob, which line would you prefer to use?
I prefer to use the race at the $20,000 level, which is nearer, or at today's race. If the horse performed well at 32,000 and did not win, but his pace line would make him a real contender in today's race, then I still would use the last race.
Would you suggest running both pace lines and get a comparison? Sometimes you can.
I don't like making extra work for myself. Usually when I make a decision on pace line, I stick with it. If I get burned and the race is over, then I get out my calculator and I'll figure that next race after I don't go to the cashier's window.
There are a lot of people say, okay, if a horse has a good pace line at 20 and he's going up to 32, don't use the $20,000 pace line. That's what we've essentially said here. Try to find a pace line equal. The other argument is, if he ran well at 32, he's going to run better at 20. Not so. Horses chase speed. Horses chase class. A horse will have a better pace line at 32 than at 20, even though he was way out of the race. You show me a common plater running against a secretariat, and you'll see the best race that common plater ever ran. because he was chasing speed. So I think that the idea that a horse is dropping, if he's dropping too much, I would still look for a class level to select my pace line. And I do what Al does. I'll look at both of them. And if I see a marked difference at a given call, a horse might run a $32,000 race faster than a $20,000 race, but where was he at the second call? Was his big move in the third fraction? Did he chase tiring speed when there was no hope for him to win? Those are the things to look forward to. But Bob's point is well taken. And
to clarify, I was assuming that the $20,000 pace line you were talking about really was not a usable pace line. And should you force it anyway just because it was at this level? If the second race back is at or near today's level, and it was a fairly good effort, then I would use it. If it was an unusable pace line, I wouldn't go back further. I would use his last race, even though it was at a higher class. That would be probably closer to what you could expect today in a way of performance than going back even further in his past performance.
The one irony we found was in a horse by the name of Bombay Bartender, who paid $40, $30, $20, every time he ran at $25,000. Every time he ran at $25,000, he would do well. The trainer would put him up to, get him up to 32, he wouldn't do anything. He even put him down to 20, and he did not do well. But at 25, he did well. So the closer you can come in class to today's race without going too far back, anytime you go more than four, you better have a doggone good reason. All right, now we've got, those are our excuses. Let's review them. The conditions of the race are different. The purse is decidedly different. The distance is decidedly different, and there's no justification for the change in distance. The last race was under different weather conditions. The last race, a different class. The last race, an immeasurably higher or lower daily variant. Another thing that I use as an excuse, was it the first race over that track at that meet? Any comments on that, Larry?
I think it's your last point,
though. Well, what do you think about discounting perhaps a horse's first race over a track and not using that pace line? Because the old adage, second race over the track, watch out, is borne up fairly accurately.
I think that applies also to your, say, your foreign horse in the same way. But you wait for the second or third race.
All right, so what we're telling people then, you can use that as an excuse. If the last race was not a very good race, but it was the first race over the track, then you might be justified in going back to a previous race, if that was a good race. If the second race back was a good race, you can make an excuse by it being the first race over the track. Anybody disagree or want to expand on that?
We did overlook that one column that lists the various tracks that the horse has run. That's included in the past performance data. And I think it's important to take a look at that column to see what level track the horse has been running. It will have a lot of effect on his time and the class of horse that he has been racing against. So the track is very important.
It sure is. And Al?
Well, I was going to say, first time on the track can also mean the first time after a layoff. And that's probably one of the most difficult things to determine. One of the most difficult racing propositions is the horse that's been freshened. Is he going to run well today, or does he need a couple of outings? That sometimes you can't really tell for sure, but I think one way to get some sort of a grasp is to look back in his past performances and see if he's had other layoffs and exactly how he did after the layoff. Some horses run their best races right after a layoff. Other horses, of course, most horses have to be raced into condition. So I think what you want to do is if you got a layoff horse, to look to see if he runs well fresh, and maybe go back to a pace line that where he is coming off of a layoff, and you perhaps use that as a pace line. especially if he's been working out real well just prior to his comeback race.
That's an excellent point, because I'm looking right here at this particular pace line from Arlington, and I see a horse who had two firsts in a row to the 6th of October in 1982, and then he was laid off until April of 1983, ran a bad race and got progressively better, took him about two races, and he was in the money. That is his pattern. Now, you might find a pattern that is just the reverse. He was laid off because he was not doing well, and then after a layoff comes back and runs terrific race.
That happens quite frequently, and you have to know your track, your trainers, and your horses. If you go to the same circuit all the time, and you do a lot of betting and handicapping and following the horses, try to get to know the horses and know what their patterns are. Just because a horse doesn't run for 3 or 4 months, don't forget him. When he comes back, try and recall. How did he run last time, or what kind of a horse was he, and so on. Some horses, like Howard mentions, will come back and they will run their very best race, the first race after layoff. And then you use that pace line and they get progressively worse from there. That's particularly true with claiming horses. Or it could be just the opposite. Some horses will come back and they'll run a very poor race and get progressively better. You have to know which one it is. If you have any doubt, don't bet the race.
In the manual, we do a profile of a horse in motion based on a horse named Compliaros. And if you really want to understand a horse's behavior characteristics in regard to this subject we're just addressing or any other subject, just do a pace line on the horse, from every horse from the bottom of the past performance chart to the top. And pretty soon you'll know that horse. I tell clients that if you would treat horses as you did the girl you fell in love with and perhaps ultimately married, you would know a lot more about them. Even the most ununderstanding of people will suddenly develop great understandings and insights when they're in love, when they want to impress somebody. In short, you learn something about the patterns of behavior of that boss you want to raise from, or that girl you were in love with and trying to impress. You know the patterns of the behavior of the horse, that's the first big step toward winning consistently. And then there's the human element. Bob, understanding how certain trainers affect horses.
It's quite true. If you're a regular patron of your local circuit, it behooves you to become well acquainted with the wiles and methods of the local trainers, because the trainers do make all the decisions regarding the horse, not the owners, not the jockeys or the track management. So if you have a trainer who has a particular ability taking horses that were having physical problems, laying them up, and then bringing them back to a good effort first time out, you should know that. If you have a trainer that would prefer, because of a small staff or what have you, to race his horses into condition up to a good effort, you should know that. These are things that you can learn just by keeping records and following your local people.
Okay, we have established, I think, everybody has agreed that you start with the last race, and if you go back another race, the second race back, you've got to have a valid excuse, and the valid excuse has to be somewhere in that past performance line.
We didn't mention one of the most valid excuses, and that is a trouble line.
That's good. I'm glad you brought that in, because that's the one thing that was not in this line I was looking at, and we overlooked. That is a very valid one. But, Al, let's talk about a trouble line where, with trouble, the horse ran the best race of its life. We throw out that race because it had a trouble line?
It depends on the kind of trouble. Some horses do amazing things in races. If they break poorly from the gate, they might get a very good second call because they're rushed up. Yet I would hesitate to use that second call because of the fact that they were using an unusual amount of energy to get that good second call. So I would say it depends on the kind of trouble they have. I'm more concerned about horses that are blocked or impeded, are making a big move and all of a sudden run into a wall of horses. Those are the ones that I think I don't want to use that line, because it doesn't represent necessarily how they could have run. I certainly want to take into consideration that they're still in condition, and that race indicates they're in condition, but I probably want to use another line to get a more accurate reading.
Especially if you feel that the trouble line is noted in the form really did have an effect on the outcome of the race and doesn't make the pace line viable for today's conditions.
Frequently, it's like a football player who fumbles the ball a couple of times in the end zone and runs back the length of the field for a touchdown. The trouble jarred the timing of everybody up and gave him more adrenaline or something, and the play was much better. So you can look at a positive trouble line, and the horse that produces more positive results as a result of trouble as one that you should be suspicious of, just as one for his impeded. However, unless you find in that positive trouble line, the one that produced better results, a fraction that he never ran before. For instance, if he runs a 44-4 second call and he's never run better than a 45 before, you'll know that it was the adrenaline caused by the bump, and you're not going to be looking for that fraction again in the next race. But trouble is a very good good excuse to go back a race. Ron?
This goes back to what we've said many times before, and you'll probably hear again, and that is that you still have to use your brain, and you can't just use the computer as the readout. You have to figure out why you get that readout.
Okay. We've pretty well gone over this subject, which says that you must have an excuse each time you go back in the past performances beyond the last race, the second last, the third last, and if you're going back four, you better have very valid excuses. And one of those valid excuses was prevalent in Eastern tracks and Northern California tracks last year. There was ice every day that the horse ran in four or five consecutive races, or there was terrible inclement weather in the Bay Area, for instance. And you couldn't take one of the last four races, especially on the ice, because the time was exceedingly fast. And it was not indicative of what the horse would do on a regular dried-out track, so you had to go back for that. But make sure your excuse is valid. Now let's address the most common mistakes that people make by overlooking some of these things. We're kind of taking it now, the same subject, but going about it in reverse. All right, one of the mistakes we're talking about is making no excuse for the last race being bad when there is actually an excuse, even though it be hidden. Ron, you brought that point up, and it's a very good one. If you want to expand on it?
Well, yeah. We'd like to get an input from the group here, because quite often you'll see a very bad race in the last race of the horse, although all the other conditions fit, the surface is right, the distance is right, the class is correct, but the horse really ran a bad race. So if you use that particular pace line, you're going to get bad numbers on the horse, and you'll find that the horse came out and won that particular race, the next race. So does anybody have any thoughts on that?
Well, one barometer to determine if the horse is going to run better than that today, I think, is first of all, look to see what happened after that race. Was the horse laid up for a while? Did he work out at all? I think if you find that a horse is coming back fairly soon and has had some nice workouts, that it was just a clunker and that he's going to run more to his better pace line today.
Was it a clunker deliberately or inadvertently?
Well, there are a lot of things that you don't see in the form that could cause the bad race. The horse and rider combination may not have been suitable. The horse might have had some trouble that isn't in the form. He might have hit the gate going out. He might have got jostled slightly, and the daily racing form observer didn't pick it up. There could be a lot of different reasons. And so I look to see, first of all, if he's coming right back at the same class, maybe even had a workout since, then I think that you should search for a different pace line. On the other hand, if the horse you see a big space there where he's not on the track at all, then it looks like he's going out of form and has some physical problems that started with that race.
And the way to detect several things in there is to see if is this pattern exists in his past performances. This, you don't, everyone can't know trainer maneuvers or the patterns or personalities of a trainer, but if you see that a horse has had several races where he's run 9 lengths off and then in 2 separate straight races and come back at the same class and won it, you can see that there is a slight pattern. This horse has achieved a good race after a bad or 2 bad races in a row.
Yes, it's very difficult to try and follow every horse and all the trainers and all the maneuvers that they make, so you have to be kind of subjective about it. If you can't find a real valid reason, but you look at the horse's past performance and you see pretty good efforts, more than one. In other words, the horse occasionally runs very good races, and the last one was a real clunker, but he's back pretty soon, like Al mentioned. That means he's probably in condition. Many things could have affected his reason. It can even be personalities, the handler, whoever saddled. It could be a lot of... Horses are just like humans. They get emotions, too.
Ron handed me a race, which he was using as an example of a horse that ran a very, very bad race. But there was in that race he handed me a hidden fraction. Whenever you find a very bad race, before you throw out the horse, make sure there wasn't an excellent hidden fraction. You'll find maybe that it'll usually be the second fraction or the third fraction. There'll be something in there that indicates it. In this particular race, the horse named Resind, who went on to win the subsequent race, had 2 very bad races if you're only looking at his final. He finished 9 lengths and 10 3/4 lengths out in his last, but he was first at the first call in both races, showed early speed and slowed up. This is, of course, a well-known conditioning factor. And we have it in the manual that if a horse ran a very good early pace and then died, not to use the closing fractions from that race, but to average how he usually closes at that distance and artificially assemble yourself a pace. That's how many big payoffs you'll get from that. So look for a hidden fraction before you say it was a bad race.
Early speed is the key.
If you couple that with a little class drop, it's even better.
But always bear in mind, you're expected to win 5, 6, or even 7. I mean, you're expected to lose even 5, 6, or 7 out of every 20 races. You're not going to win them all. You're not going to be anticipating all these maneuvers. As long as you do it 2/3 of the time, you'll make a lot of money. Okay, let's take the most common thing that we all have made, a mistake, when it was a glaring mistake, and had we not made it, we would have chosen the right pace line. Can you think of your worst mistakes, Frank, that you've made, that when you look back on them, you say, well, how did I ever do that? I've got one right here.
Sometimes you just overlook something.
You're going to have to give me a lot more time to think about all these mistakes that I've made, I'll tell you.
Well, while Frank is thinking of his, I can think of mine.
Okay, well, it's nice to know you've made a mistake here.
More than I'd care to remember. I get suckered into these wire-to-wire pace lines. When a horse gets an easy lead on, you know, out by 2 or 3 lengths, and he goes wire-to-wire, I don't think you should use that line for your pace line. It's just something about the nature of the beast, and when he gets out and runs that free and easy, that he's just not going to duplicate that effort next time. If it's a wire-to-wire win where he's pressed, that is, he's ahead by a nose or less than a half a length at the calls, then I might consider using it. But if that prospective pace line race is an easy wire-to-wire, it just is not representative of the race, of the horse's ability. So I will probably look for another race rather than the wire-to-wire pace line.
A very good point. One that we made in the manual that said avoid using wire-to-wire pace lines, and when you do, discount them, and when you insist upon using them, expect that the horse will not come in first this time. That's the most indicative of the horse is just coming to his... He's either coming into form or he's going out of form. Wire-to-wire maiden wins are the most especially the ones to look out for, because those are the least indicative of what that horse will do next time. So watch out for wire-to-wire pace lines. Al is absolutely right. Since we paused for a moment there, Tom came in, Tom's been especially effective handicappers, and Tom hasn't had a chance to say anything, so you want to kind of sum up, Tom, how you pick a pace line?
Well, I haven't heard anyone else, but...
Well, that's good, and then it'll be fresh.
Let me have a race and fall. You're right. Al makes a point about picking the wire-to-wire horses, and I'm in a little bit of a slump right now, and I think possibly that I'm doing the same type of thing. And it's so easy to pick, especially if you're trying to stay within a current. I try to keep my pace lines within a six-week, seven-week frame, if at all possible. And within that period of time, it's easy to get suckered into a bad pace line.
When you say you're in a slump lately, Tom, what do you consider a slump?
Less than 70%.
Well, see,
you get to counting on, yeah, on a certain input, and when you're not hitting at that level or higher, you start panicking, or not panicking necessarily, but you start, the lack of income is a serious thing, sure.
Don't worry about it. I was stuck at 69% for weeks.
Okay, well, you're getting suckered into a bad pace line, and one of the things that was brought up, and we'd like to get your comment, is that Ron talked about you see a very bad race in the last race, and a lot of people would say, well, that horse has got a hole in it, throw it out. What excuse do you use not to use a bad last race?
Well, I keep charts on all the racetracks that I play, and the first thing I'll do is go to the chart to find out whether or not the if it's a speed horse, to see if speed was holding or not that particular day, whether the post positions were indicative of a good or a bad race. And I'll look for general excuses that might give me the opportunity to go beyond that race and try to find something better than that.
What do you find is unforgivable in a last race that you just can't possibly go beyond it?
Just a generally dull effort. The horse doesn't make a move at all. Doesn't show any early speed. An early speed type that doesn't show any speed at all. And a lot will depend on the trainers. Some trainers specialize in bouncing back, but that entails a pretty good study of the trainers on the grounds, and you can't use that as a general rule.
Do you look for a hidden fraction in that race?
I certainly do. Absolutely. Yeah, you look for almost anything that will give you the opportunity to use that horse, especially if you have a bad last race, you start dealing with price more than you would with a good last race. And if you have a hidden fraction, or if you have a, occasionally you have a front runner, it just gets away badly. And the race is going to look bad on paper. And if he didn't break alertly, that can often be a decent excuse to go to another line.
That's especially true with a front runner, a horse that is typically an early speed horse, who shows no early speed in his last race, but has one good fraction somewhere in there, indicates that he's still in form.
Especially that second fraction.